Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. It's Ben Baker, and thank you all for joining me once again for another great show. This week, I have Jeffrey Stern from Voice Express Corp. Now, Jeffrey, I'm going to let him tell you his story because it is an amazing one. We had a great conversation off air. But what we're going to be talking about is how do you emotionally tie yourself to your clients using sound? And this conversation could go a million different directions. We're going to see which way it goes. But Jeffrey, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm fine, Ben. Thank you for having me. This is real exciting. And I love the concept that you framed this story with in terms of how do emotions, how are they triggered and how are we affected by them? And I'm excited to talk about it in terms of the history of my company and what we've done in terms of voice.
So why don't we start there? Why don't we let you tell a little bit of a history of, you know, Jeffrey and Voice Express. Give people a little bit of an understanding of where you came from, where you are, where you're going. And then let's really get into the meat of things because, you know, voice really triggers emotion. And I think that it's a really important conversation for any business. But, you know, understanding what you do really gives us context for the conversation.
Great. Well, I think mine is a typical entrepreneur story. I was involved in a bunch of different technologies, and for whatever reason, I was approached by my brother who said, what would happen if you sent a bouquet of flowers and you could include a cassette with that bouquet? You'd go to the store, you'd record it, and when the bouquet arrived, they'd put it into their cassette recorder, that dates me already, and hear the message behind the gift. And so I had a technical background and I said, okay, so it won't be a cassette. It'll probably be a chip and you probably won't have to walk into the store. You'll be able to do it over the phone or over the internet. But the concept, the kernel was there and that got me launched. And like any other entrepreneur, you never know which direction you're going, but you've got to be in the market. So I started creating keepsakes that had the chip inside of them. And I made one that could fit inside of a plush doll or a pillow. And I decided, you know, the more of our five senses that you can trigger, the more you're able to communicate the emotion of the moment. So why just voice? Why not have a tactile teddy bear that you could hug? And why couldn't you have a t-shirt on that teddy bear that would have a picture on it? So now I had to find a company that made t-shirts for teddy bears. And I found one in St. Louis, Missouri, and the guy who made them says, by the way, can I show your voice recorder to another customer? And I said, sure. And sure enough, he showed it to a woman named Maxine Clark, who founded Build-A-Bear Workshop. And they probably had three stores at that point. And she loved it. And she got on the phone with me and with trepidation in her voice, she said, will you sell me just the recorder? Do I have to buy the teddy bear from you also? And I said, lady, if I never see another teddy bear in my life, I'll be a happy guy. So again, from an entrepreneur's point of view, sometimes you have to flesh out an idea. Even if you're just creating the widget, you need to show people what it could look like, what it would feel like. And that was the beginning of a wonderful relationship. I think I've shipped probably 50 million little voice modules that look like this, that go inside of teddy bears. And literally, getting back to the subject matter, enable children, parents, young and old, to either record a voice and communicate an emotion, or take licensed music and animate a piece of inanimate plush into a friend, a buddy, a companion. And we constantly are getting stories of people who need to replace the battery because there's a voice of someone who's no longer with us, or of a soldier in Iraq who recorded a message for their child. So on the one hand, it's a very technical piece of technology, but on the other hand, it can carry the deepest and most profound emotion. And that's where we are today. And we are always either being approached by people with ideas or coming up with our own ideas that ultimately take that kernel and see where you can go with it.
And, you know, I want to delve into that a little bit deeper because, I mean, you glossed over it, but the emotional tie of that, putting that voice chip inside a stuffed animal, it is truly brilliant. Because what you're doing is, it's not just an inanimate object, it's that inanimate object. And there's stories of people, you're right, whose parents have died, and the parent, when they were a child, you know, recorded a voice, and, you know, the people have carried that stuffed animal with them the rest of their life because it reminds them of their parent. And the voice that is there gets passed on from generation to generation to be able to have a keepsake of the deceased relative. And that can't be understated. It's amazing the power that must have. So my thought question to you is, how do we get to a point where we sat there and said, wait a second here, we've got the lightning in the bottle, and this is something that, you know, is going to, you know, be able to help people, you know, communicate on a completely different level. What was that? I mean, besides that aha moment of that story you just told me, how do you translate that kernel of an idea to something that everybody wants and must have?
I think, you know, one of the takeaways from my technology doesn't relate to my technology.
Right.
The takeaway is that we have triggers, emotional triggers. And just as you and I can hear a song that we first heard in our dorm room, and if we hear it now, we can almost smell the beer on the floor. The five senses that we have are amazing triggers. And any brand and any consumer and any author needs to take advantage, whether it's a color palette, whether it's a sound of a door closing in a certain way, whatever it is, you cannot ignore that. You have to emphasize it. And you build on that to create connections and interactions with your intended audience, whether it's a loved one or whether you're a brand and it's a brand user that could become a brand ambassador. So in our case, we take voice and sound, which is, you know, think of a baby, whether their first cry and their first word, it's the most unmediated way of communication between what makes us human, which is language. And if you take that and you say to yourselves, how can I use it to break through all the clutter and break through all the barrier and just convey not only by the content of my words, but by the intonation and the emphasis and the voice. There's a reason why we say, have you found your voice? And it doesn't always relate to what comes out of your larynx. It's the personality. It's the spirit. And so I think the biggest takeaway from, I think, my path, which is I do help brands and individuals communicate in an unmediated, primal, direct fashion. But ultimately, every brand needs to do that, and every person needs to work at it. And I think COVID has here we are talking over Zoom, it has really taken that message to heart. You know, everybody thought the telephone had been replaced by the emoji. But here we are picking up the phone and talking to people that we need to be in touch with. We talk on a regular basis. It's not a quick call to transact. It's a call to touch and to hear a familiar voice. And so companies that have been doing trade shows now have to find a way of how they can connect with their consumer. Artists who used to have live concerts have to do the same. You know, everybody talks about what happens the day after, but I hope that one of the silver linings is the day after we remind ourselves and we remember what things kept us going and what things were important to us when we lost so much.
And I think that that's really important. Is, you know, I had a couple conversations this morning with different people, and the conversations revolved around the fact of what we miss is that connection. What we miss is that connection to each other, whether it be conventions, whether it be trade shows, whether it be, you know, just going out for dinner, whether it be anything, that ability to be in a not asynchronous relationship, but you'll be able to actually talk to each other back and forth. And it's not just the fact of communication, it's understanding each other. And it's being able to understand each other on a deeper level and be able to get to know everybody at a deeper level. That's the beautiful thing about Zoom and telephone and, you know, face-to-face conversation, is that you get to have a meaningful understanding of what other people are thinking about. It, as you said, it's not just intonation. It's not just cadence. It's not just words coming out of the mouth. It's ideas. And what are the feelings behind the ideas? So the question is, how does that translate to the business world when we want to be able to trigger emotions, to be able to have people not only have reach, but recall and engagement? How do we enable that through sound effectively to be able to get people to say, ah, yes, I need to talk to that brand?
I think one of the, and maybe I'll be personal about this in terms of how it's affected me, I always realized that when one of the magical things that Build-A-Bear does and has taught me is when the family, the kid comes into the store, yes, first they pick the skin, which is basically a plush without any plush inside of it. And that's the pick me or choose me station. The next station is the hear me station, where they take my product and they basically animate the that plush with sound. Then they go to the stuff me station. And then they accessorize, as they say. But because of the sequence, it means that you start with the message. You start with the voice. You start with the animation. And so how does that translate into a transaction? And, you know, a portion of what is sold at Build-A-Bear is for gifting. Obviously, fourth quarter sales are big. Valentine's Day sales are big. And when guests come in on Valentine's Day, the percentage of them picking a voice obviously is higher because people have something to say. But the point is, I started thinking about gifting and the way that we do gifting in the transactional world that we live in. And all of it on the front end is about picking the gift. And that can be very stressful. Is it too expensive? Have I only gone out with the girl twice? Am I, you know, is she on a diet? Is the sweater the right color, the right size? All of the things that make gift giving something that you and I know myself, we actually push off because it becomes so stressful. And then at the very end, they say, is this for a gift? And if it is, you have a little box and you probably have 120 letters that you can use to express yourself. And you hope that the message will be printed on a tastefully done card and not printed on the UPS label, where the recipient will miss it. And how strange is all of that when every culture ultimately believes it's the thought behind the gift that counts? Well, if it's the thought behind the gift that counts, why is it always an afterthought? And so what happens to the transaction if we follow Build-A-Bear's example and we put the animation with voice first? So we haven't really changed anything. You might still be writing the same card. You might be speaking the card if you have the voice on the brain like I do. But whatever you do, what happens to a gifting transaction if you start with the message? And if you're so happy with that message, because I recall a certain situation that we shared together, we already are smiling. What happens to the stress of picking out the absolutely right gift at that point? And those are ideas that I've been playing with, and I venture to say that if every brand and individual looks at the way that they transact, I mean, what happens when you call a help desk and the first thing that the person says is not what product do you have, what is the issue, but where are you and what's the weather like today? And, you know, maybe that call center employee is not judged by how little they keep our customer on the phone and how quickly they solve their problem, but how long they engage them. So I do think that the ramifications of some of the issues that we've been discussing today are infinite, really, in terms of the way they can change the way that we transact and engage with each other and with brands.
Well, what comes to mind is Maya Angelou. And, you know, I'm going to kill the actual quote, but the last part of it is, we always remember how we make people feel. And I think that as brands, we need to get back to thinking about, how do we want people to feel when they engage with us? And your customer experience phone call is so apropos, because when people call into a customer service line, they have a problem. They're frustrated, something's not going well, you know, there's something wrong with the product, or they're having some issue. And if they had a friendly voice that, you know, treated them like a human being, and the first thing that they didn't ask them was, what's your account number? You know, and there was those two or three simple questions to find out, you're right, where are you right now? You know, what, you know, how are you doing today? You know, thanks for giving us a call. Those little things trigger emotions. And I think that that is so important for businesses to instill in their people, that we are all in an emotional involvement, because if we're not, all we are is commodities. So the question is, how can we use voice effectively? You know, let's take your medium in there to get people to stop being commodities and start being brands worth loving.
I think that's a great, great question. And I think that, you know, we've spent, I don't know, 20 minutes talking about voice and its ability to convey information. But there's a flip side to voice, and that is to listen.
Yes.
So it's one thing to speak, and it's another thing to listen. So there too, my company, and we talked a lot about Build-A-Bear, but another industry that we've been in is direct mail, especially for the pharmaceutical industry, that found it very difficult to get in contact with doctors. Doctors are busier. They don't have time to have what they used to call a mini detail and sit with a rep for 10 minutes. So when we first launched the audio card, a card that played audio, they said, well, can you make one that plays 5 minutes? And I said, well, I can make it, but who would want to listen to it? And sure enough, we launched, and this goes back at least 10 years, a card that would go to a doctor. And if it was, let's say, a Pfizer beta blocker, the doctor would be able to listen to, press different buttons and hear about different information that he was interested in. Clinical studies, dosage, symptoms, that sort of thing. So it was giving them the choice also. It wasn't only talking to them, it was giving them the choice. And then, of course, other people came out with a similar product. So we came out with a card that had a video screen inside. So now you could not only hear, but you could also see. But ultimately, what I started thinking about is, what would happen if you sent a brochure that had a smart speaker built into it and could not only speak, but could listen? There's nothing more annoying than having a package sales pitch or seeing a PowerPoint where slides 5 through 7 don't even relate to you, or being pitched on a product that you aren't even interested in. So we kind of looked at those buttons that we used to put on the audio card and say, well, what happens if you could be prompted to say what you were interested in? And so we're literally launching now a product called Voice Express Connect that has a smart speaker built into it. It doesn't have to pair with Bluetooth or go onto Wi-Fi. So it has a limited amount of information, but just enough to whet their interest to want to know more. But the point is, getting to your question, you have to figure out ways, and it could be through technology, such as a smart speaker, but it could also be through the correct demographic information, knowing what information is given to the individual. I mean, we're told that personalization is not only important, it's critical right now. When you come to a website and you've been there before, you know, the annoying part is, it knows that I was here. The pleasant part is, it knows that I was here, and it's not going to ask me the same questions, and it's going to show me stuff that it knows I'm interested in. So it has to be done tastefully in terms of this listening and translating that information to the appropriate part. You need to empower your user so that they feel they're in charge, whether it's by way of permissions or, in our case, just asking them, what do they want to know? But I think that the flip side of being able to speak to our loved ones and our brand advocates is also to be able to listen to them and to translate the information that we gain by listening to them into information that's important to them, and don't insult them by providing them with stuff that they're not interested in.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. The words I hear on this, I mean, listening is so powerful, but it's choice and empowerment. And it's enabling our clients and acknowledging that our clients are individuals. You know, that every single person that engages with you does so based on their own history, their own thoughts, their own values, their own ideas. And no two people are going to think about things exactly the same. Yes, we can generalize. However, there has to be customization, and there has to be the realization that there's going to be anomalies. And anomalies are not one-offs. They are understood that there's going to be anomalies in every situation. And we as companies need to sit there and go, okay, how do we listen to understand what our clients really need? What's important to them, and giving them choice? So I love the fact that what you're doing is enabling your clients and to give their client choice of how they create the engagement. Because you're right, communication is a two-way street. And we should probably be listening 70% and speaking about 30%. If we want to be effective as a company, because it's not important how what we think our customers want. It's important for us to understand what they really want. So how do we take that information? How do we take that thought process and translate it into a way to help companies build that relationship in a digital age? Because we're not going back to the fact where we're going to be able to walk into every single person's office that we want to and have those one-on-one conversations anytime soon. How do we enable companies to realize that in a digital world, we can listen more effectively, engage more effectively, and serve our clients more effectively?
Well, I think we're doing it. I think we're all organically either sinking or swimming in that world that you describe. And at least most of the people that I deal with, you know, your first question these days is, how are you doing and how's your business doing? And those that are being successful are being able to employ all of those digital tools that you describe that enable them to connect more directly.
But they have to mean it.
They do have to mean it. They have to mean it. And I think that possibly because it's now a must-have rather than a should-have, you've got to do it well. Because in the past, you had other things that you could, you know, your laurels that you could rely on. But when your only means of connection is through a Zoom call, or your only means of connection is through a direct mail, or whatever it might be, you've got to make sure that you, you know, hit all the bases and you do it right. And I think that it those best practices that we are polishing up today will be used to all of our betterment in the post-COVID era as well, and change the way that many of us transact. This whole order online, pick up in store, curbside, all of these things, you know, even QR codes, they'd been around for a long time. But I knew that there were people that hadn't even heard about them. And now we sit down in a restaurant and we don't want to touch that menu. So there's a whole bunch of things that are thoughtful too, that when the amount of things that brands do, and we're talking about the brands that really get it, that what comes across is forgetting about the emotional content or the message, but it's just the thoughtfulness of it is something that I think also has to be emphasized and understood by everybody. It's those little gestures that we all have, maybe because most half of our face is covered. But in any case, it's thoughtfulness, I think, is something that we all have a lot to benefit from.
So you bring up QR codes, which I thought was really interesting because I started off in direct mail 25 years ago. And most companies, when QR codes came to North America, they did them wrong. You know, they put them on the side of a bus. So you're chasing down, you know, chasing the bus down the side of the road, trying to, you know, catch up to the bus so you can actually click the QR code, or they're up on a sign, you know, 30 feet up in the air and your phone can't reach high enough in order to be able to get it or whatever. Or somebody sends a QR code and it just goes to a generic page. Let's talk about how are people using technology wrong? How are they using it incorrectly? In order where they think, okay, well, yeah, fine, we'll implement this solution and everything will be great. Let's talk about the people who are just not getting how to use technology, or they're using it in a way that they're just making people aggravated.
You know, I think when you're absolutely right that when QR codes were launched, they were an annoyance. They were a brand begging somebody to further inconvenience themselves. Now take out their smartphone, click on the QR code, find out that they had to download an app to do that, and so forth and so on. Whereas my menu example was one where within the transaction, somebody sits down and they just the thinking of a waiter handing you a menu that was used 5 seconds before by somebody else. So it's part of a process. And that, you know, the same, let's talk about in-store. Let's talk about retail. You know, you go through an aisle in retail, and I think retail is always going to have its place, even though during COVID, online sales have taken off. People always want to see a product. They want to touch a product. You know, there's buying and then there's shopping. Shopping is a human experience.
Exactly.
It's something that we do to enjoy ourselves. So we're thinking about, for instance, our voice interaction technology at point of sale. You know, they talk about end caps. They talk about shelf talkers. Shelf talkers don't really talk until a guy who's as crazy as I come along and say, well, why shouldn't it talk? And why shouldn't it listen? And why do you have to touch an annoying screen to get the information that you want? You should be able to interact in a touchless way. But how do you take that from a conversation to a path to purchase? And that's where a QR code comes in. So in some of the studies that we've done, both, you know, formally and anecdotally, to have a QR code at a point of sale and expect somebody to walk up to it and scan it is, again, getting back into that, why should I? Whereas if you introduce the QR code as part of a conversation, they call it conversational commerce. So now I come up to the shelf with hair care products and I'm overwhelmed with choices, or shaving products if you're a guy, and I don't know where to begin. And I'm able to interact with a display, whether it's voice or maybe I'm just reading it. And then I get to the point where I want more information, where maybe there's a QR code at the end of a paragraph that interests me because it's about if you have abrasion, or if you have dandruff, or if you have split ends, or whatever it is. Now you're offering people a path, a transparent way of taking the information that they're getting now in a physical world, moving it onto their phone, so that even they might even place a phone call and talk to somebody in the same store to see if there's something available. But that person knows where they're located because of the particular QR code that they scanned. So the short answer is, if you put a QR code as part of some sort of conversation, that it becomes a tool to enlarge that conversation or to move to the next step, then I think it's totally appropriate and welcome. Whereas if you flash a QR code, whether on a moving bus, as you describe, or on the bottom of a print ad, what do I need it for? Why should I?
And you're right. We need to think about how, not that something's a good idea, but how is somebody going to use it? And how is it going to benefit people? And that's what technology needs to be. Technology needs to be something that benefits people, that helps people understand, that enables people to solve problems. And it can't just be another trick out there to gain attention. It can't be just that clickbait ad on the internet that you see all the time where it says, click here for three ways to get such and such, you know, silky hair, or whatever. And you know, if you pay them $29.95, once you go to the end of their article, they'll send you three obvious things that you probably knew anyway. But if we look at the world and we sit there and say, okay, let's use technology, let's figure out how people actually use technology. And that requires asking people. So my question is, when you're developing a technology piece for a client, how do you start the process to make sure that whatever you're going to design is going to be something that's going to actually be used, useful, and valued?
That's a terrific question. I was just talking with our team today about, how do you, once you get a client who's interested in creating one of these audio cards with the smart speaker installed, what's the dialogue? If you're creating print ads or television ads, everybody pretty much knows, okay, so you need a television producer. But when you're launching a whole new technology, you're talking about how, and I can enlarge the question, not only to my card, but to a smart speaker skill. You know, it's there, as you say, the technology is there. Now, what do you put on it? So the direction that we started going into is this old FAQ, frequently asked questions. You know, that's something that is there because at the end of the day, brands know what customers are troubled by. And if they don't, they should, and they should keep track of them. And that frequently asked questions should not be written in stone. It should be dynamic. But ultimately, the frequently asked question point is what questions are being asked and what answers do we need to be giving? And that might be it's the same as if you and I are discussing what we're going to talk about on a podcast. We're going to start thinking about the questions that are meaningful to us. And I think that if a brand starts from that point of view, I say to the client, what are the three pieces of information that you want to convey to your targeted or to your customer? And what are the three things that your customers want to know from you? And if we can address both of those, maybe with the emphasis on the customer, then we can create whatever the communication piece that we're working on and whatever media is going to deliver that content. But if you start from the point of view of what are your customers interested in? What is the first thing that someone asks? And that's the thing that really bothers you and me. You get a new product, and the most obvious question is not answered. And it just drives you crazy because you know you're not the first person who's going through this experience. What got lost in the between the cracks? So it's really just saying, what is on someone's mind? What's the first thing that they do when they open up that package, when they get that software, when they unpack that printer? And if you can address those questions, then you've probably hit upon so many of the topics that we've discussed in this discussion, starting from literally conveying data, going all the way to a gesture, that you're showing that what the customer needs, what the customer requires, means something to you. And that's the most important message that we as individuals and a brand can give.
Jeffrey, I love it. I'm going to ask you one last question, then I'm going to let you go. And it's the question I ask everybody else. I'll make sure that all your contact information is in the show notes so people can get in touch with you. And hopefully they can produce another 50 million purchase order for you. But the question I ask is, when you leave a meeting, when you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you and your company when you're not in the room?
It's a great question. You know, I think it's something that we all tell our kids, at least my generation and your generation has told our kids, find something that you're passionate about. And, you know, sometimes when my kid's looking for a job and I say, you know, maybe you can lay off the passion a little bit and just find something that pays the bill. But what I do know that when I get involved something, I get very passionate about it. And maybe a little bit over the top, but, you know, I referenced earlier on that, you know, a crazy guy like me obviously is thinking, how can we put a voice into that? What I'd like to think is when I leave a room and when I'm driving away and people are saying, you know, what was that about? But ultimately, that I left behind at least a little bit of an insight into coming off of my passion and my focus, my dogged focus on voice and what voice can do, that I left some passion behind in the room. And hopefully that passion changed the way people, you know, look and think about those mundane, trivial things that they do on a regular basis every day.
Well, Jeffrey, your passion is infectious. So thank you very much for being such an amazing guest. I loved our conversation. And thanks for sharing with my audience.
Ben, thank you so much for the platform. And I look forward to following you with your other guests as well, because I think you're doing a great service. What's your story? What can be better than that, right?
That's what the goal is. Thanks a lot.
All the best.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?